Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and however everybody is listening. Hopefully, everybody is doing well out there on the internet lands. Life is going very, very well for me, and we have a really, really good show ahead for you. Just a side note, I literally broke my wedding ring. It's not broken, but there's a chip of it missing. So, yes, I'm still married, but you could see my ring tan line. My wife and I are gonna have to go get a new wedding ring because I literally dropped it when I went to go put it on and a chip flew off. But, anyways, got this tank top last night from going to see Pantera. I was telling my guests today that it's my test run for no sleep because I didn't sleep a lot last night. So, as everybody knows, my daughter's going to be here within the next few weeks. I'm very, very excited. So, if you feel generous enough today, please feel free to super chat. I would greatly appreciate it. We're going to need every single penny we can get to make sure our little girl has the absolute best life possible. But you didn't come to hear me talk about all that stuff today. Did MAGA get duped? My guest and I have both been talking about this quite a bit. It's been very interesting over the last couple of weeks, considering some of the stuff that's been going on lately. It just, I don't know where this administration's brain is because just a lot of things optically have been really bad. But like this last week, it's a whole other level. But before we get into all that today, please make sure you go to all the links below where you can find my guest, everything he's got going on, and of course, all my links below. Go to talkfitness.com, use code Kyle at checkout to let them know I sent you. And without further ado, let's rock and roll. And welcoming back to the show, my dear friend, Mr. Daniel McAdams. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Kyle. How are you?
Very, very good. And as I said in the introduction, I'm very excited to have you back here. It has been a hell of a last week, last month. What the hell's all going on?
Yeah, it seems like the implosion of the administration. It's interesting to see such a crack in his core support, it seems like. And as much as I would rather see it perhaps based on principle and losing faith in the fact that he was supposed to be the peace president, nevertheless, I can't say that he doesn't deserve it because he's treated his supporters with such an incredible level of contempt, particularly today in a piece in a post that he did on his Truth Social, where he called the people who wanted to see the Epstein files his former supporters. It's astonishing to see someone like that turn his back not only on key positions, key personnel in his administration who've called for it, but literally his own son, Donald Trump Jr., who is on record several times, on video several times, calling for the release of these. So it definitely seems like an implosion in the person of President Donald Trump.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's just so bizarre to me to see someone who campaigned on this, right? And I mean, regardless of whether you believed him or not, I never really did. When they first started declassifying stuff, I'm like, oh, that's actually surprising. But it was essentially stuff that had already been out there. It was more of just kind of putting a government stamp on it. But they campaigned on this so hard, specifically some of the people that are in the administration now, with Dan Bongino, who I know I think both you and I had a little bit of a run-in with, and he called you a quote unquote Nazi, which like, you
Yeah.
serious? You're a Republican, you're supposed to be this big conservative man, but you're calling another guy a Nazi? Like,
Yeah.
whatever. And Kash Patel saying, oh, we're gonna release all these Epstein files, and then all of a sudden, there's a video after they told us there was no video, and there's no list after they said they were going to release the list, and it's on Pam Bondi's desk. I just, what do you make of it, you know?
It's the Fox News administration. I mean, literally, it seems like everyone is an administration. There are no adults there. There are people who are talking heads at Fox News, and President Trump saw them on TV and said, "Wow, I like that person. Oh, his name is Hegseth. I'll take him. Oh, her name is Bondi. I'll take her." And that's what happens. And it's one of these things, Kyle. You're still a young lad, so you haven't really had it hit you in the face yet. But when I was young, I was not necessarily looked up to, but I looked at people in government I mean, I grew up in the Reagan era, so I looked at people who were then significantly older than I am and thought, wow, these guys, I may not agree with them, but they're put together. They're pretty smart people. They seem to know what's going on. They seem to be very clever, good education, what have you. And as the older I get, and maybe it's just the quality of our leadership has changed, but they just look like a bunch of knuckleheads, who can't fight their way out of a paper bag, intellectually or even physically, perhaps. It's a real disappointment. I'm going to go back to being, 17, Ronald Reagan.
And unfortunately, I don't think it's just back then. I really do think it's most people nowadays feel very, very similar to the way that you do now, where it's kind of like, I know at least I feel very, I don't even want to say jaded, but I kind of look at the administration. I'm just like, these are a bunch of bumbling buffoons. Like everything that they've done, even the stuff that I agree with when it comes to like the optics of it, it's just been so incredibly just baffling how, especially, this last week with Epstein stuff, the Ukraine war, even going about the mass deportations and the people who they're deporting and why they're deporting them, better yet, just everything they're doing is just such an optics nightmare. And it's like you guys came in with the popular support of the people. All your efforts were, largely approved of. People wanted deportations, people wanted less government, people wanted Donald Trump to lead the country to the golden age, quote unquote. But it really seems like he took all this political capital and just dropped it and has done absolutely everything to grab defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, it's a big golden turd is what it turned out to be. But it does remind one, and I have not I don't know that I've ever seen one, but I can imagine what they're like, a reality TV show. It seems like it, where there are no consequences. Everything is scripted, and I did see one like m many years ago. I saw a few of them. But everything is scripted. There really are no consequences. You feign horror, you feign anger, but everything is sort of artificial. There's a sense of artificiality about the entire thing. And I don't vote, but I wanted Trump to win because I couldn't stand the other people. We've already
Of
had him for
course.
4 years and they were awful. And I did think that, hey, it can't hurt. After all, he is courting libertarians, so even though he's probably lying, at least he recognizes that we are a force to be reckoned with. And we started off good. And pardoning the J6ers was a great move.
Yes.
Ross Ulbricht was a great move. Those are two great things. Bringing in Elon Musk to bring in these smart young kids. I mean, these kids are like 19, 20 years old, super smart going in there. And what do? They showed us that the government that we have is not the government we actually need. It's bloated, it's useless. People haven't gone to work for years and nobody noticed. They have two or three jobs. I mean, everything that we dream about as people who are opposed to the state, it was revealed to us right then and there, and we were ecstatic. And in fact, we planned a conference, I think it was in late March, down here in Texas, and it was for the most part very positive Trump, and that was that era. But about a week before, something started going south a little bit, and that's we started getting a feeling that something was a little bit weird, and then wow, it accelerated from there. So it was a great start, but he lost his way. I don't know exactly what it was, but there are quite a few sort of road signs along the way.
I agree. So one thing that I think you might have a little bit more insight on than the average person, I know there was a friend of mine on Twitter that was kind of giving you crap for it, was everybody said we had to support Donald Trump because look, he's having Ron Paul consult the administration. And I was one of the people kind of like, okay, is this just Elon retweeting Ron Paul, which is the right thing to do? And obviously everybody's happy that he's doing that, but like people were selling this as, oh my God, Ron Paul's in the Trump administration. It's kind of like, oh, well, maybe we should pump the brakes. So what was your perspective on that at the time? And, how do you look back at that now?
Well, it may not have got as much attention, but Dr. Paul explicitly said, I'm happy to be consulted. I'm happy to give my opinion, but I have zero interest in any official role in the administration. And so that was he's yeah, if Musk wanted to retweet him, if Musk wanted to hear him talk about the Fed, he'd be crazy not to. And millions of people, because thanks to Elon Musk, saw the things that Dr. Paul was saying at the time, and that's fantastic. But I think people, they kind of drew the wrong conclusions. And I mean, Dr. Paul's not going to go on and throw cold water on it. It's great that they were listening, that he was listening. But you know, he was not interested in a role, and there was never any offer of a role. You know, it was just sort of optics again, and he doesn't resent that at all. He's just disappointed at how things have gone so far, not only on the foreign policy front, but look at the one big beautiful bill. It's an absolute disaster, and look at the people. Unfortunately, there are only a couple of them, but the people who are representing us in the legislature, who've gone against it in the name of fiscal sanity, they've been absolutely thrashed by President Trump, and I'm talking about Thomas Massie and Senator Paul. They've been absolutely thrashed continuously. So it's that part of it is just it's not only a disappointment, it's unnecessarily harsh disappointment.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it was pretty disappointing to kind of see all this go down. And I think it was Jeremy Kaufman who had made this comparison, because I was looking at this big, beautiful bill, and all my right-wing friends are saying, "Oh my God, you know, immigration's the only thing that matters. So we have to pass this big, beautiful bill because it's going to give all this funding to ICE." And my question was, why should we trust that throwing more money at a problem is going to fix it? And I even did a little bit of research on this. So the Department of Homeland Security, which, you know, funds ICE, started back in 2001 or three, I think it was, whenever the Patriot Act and everything kind of came down. Its budget back then was $3.7 billion. Then in about, I want to say 2015-ish, or no, actually up until 2024, the budget had eventually increased to about 9.7 billion. Now, after passing the big, beautiful bill, it's now almost $40 billion. So why should I buy the argument that throwing all this money at, you know, ICE is going to fix this problem that you're after, when, like, we know every other time the government throws money at something, it generally makes it worse. So, you know, why should I bite on that?
You know, I've seen that argument as well many times, and the premise is false. You know, the idea that, well, we have to pass this bill. Who cares? All that other stuff is bad. Putting all this debt on our children and grandchildren is bad. Nevertheless, we have to get these illegals out of our country. Well, that's easily solved. You know, pass a proper appropriations bill, authorization appropriations bills, and separately pass a bill, or within the Department of Homeland Security, pass a separate bill with a significant increase in the budget for ICE. That's simple. You don't have to have it smashed into a bill with a over $1 trillion military budget. It's a spurious argument, and I think it's one that was launched by the talking points crowd, the people who are waving up the Epstein dossiers at the White House and being part of the circus. You know, the paid influencers are the ones. They're given talking points because you and I can't speak for you, but I'm sure you've seen it. You saw it at the time over and over and over. Oh, McAdams, what's your problem? We got to get these people out of the country, so just shut up. You know, and it all comes from central casting.
Yeah, it's so
You got
ridiculous
dog
to me, but
grease.
yeah, he's pretty
He's
passionate
like,
about it too.
he's mad. He's, damn it. Don't
Yeah,
detour
how the
me.
hell are we gonna pay for all these kids and dogs? Damn it.
That's right. That's right.
But
I would elect him, actually.
yeah, I mean, at least you know he probably wouldn't break anything, and if he does, then hopefully it doesn't work after that. But
I mean, he's gonna crap on the rug, but so is Trump.
yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So speaking of crapping on the rug, actually, you and I have been kind of talking about the optics of the Trump administration. One thing that I really wanted to dig in with you today was specifically about the Ukraine situation. And I'm guessing you probably saw this a lot like I did. You and I probably both observed Trump's first administration and noticed that, like, oh, he actually was pretty hawkish on Russia, throwing out Russian diplomats, sanctioning Russia, and was the first one to send in deadly weapons to Ukraine. So many people pumped out the talking point that, oh, you know, this never would have happened under Trump. But then now he gets in there and he's literally continued the Biden policy and even got us more involved by getting us in this minerals deal. So, you know, one of the things that we were always told is that we have to support Trump because he'll end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. No, actually, he'll do it as president-elect. Well, here we are 6 months later, and now we are more involved carrying out the same policy as Joe Biden.
The minerals deal is like a really bad New York real estate deal, right? He sold you this beautiful penthouse. You're not going to believe it. It's the best penthouse. Everyone says it's the best penthouse in the world. And you get there and it's some dump. You know, there's no minerals there. And in fact, the top deposit of lithium. Now my dog's barking.
He
The top
agrees.
deposit, they're talking to each other. The top deposit of lithium in Ukraine was just taken by Russia. So sorry, Trump. That's a dead deal. It's just all optics. There was nothing to sell, and everyone knew it. But you know, you're right. Trump, not only did he give Ukraine the javelins to start with, but now stupidly he bragged about it. I gave him the javelins. I started this whole thing. But it wouldn't have started without me. I mean, if I was in, it wouldn't have started. You know, it absolutely makes no sense. And he had a golden opportunity at the very beginning. And a lot of people that I respect, Alex Cristoforo is one. He has a great podcast with Alexander Mercurius, the Duran, where they both said at the very beginning of the administration, "This is your chance. It's Biden's war, man. I'm out. I'm out. I'm out of
Yes.
it. I was elected to end this war. We are out. Catch you later. If you want to have a chat, well, you guys could come over here. We'll meet somewhere else, but this is not our war." He didn't do that. He wasn't able to do that. He wasn't able to let go because he wanted a big, beautiful win in the win column. You know, he wanted the neon lights. Trump won. And that's an ego issue. It's a problem that he has, and it sort of dogged him, certainly through his entire second term so far, but it was there in the first term as well. It's an ego problem, narcissism, I guess.
So what do you think about some of the stories that are coming out that are saying that Trump is allow or encouraging Zelensky to strike into Moscow? I saw a mutual friend of ours, Tom Luongo, saying he thinks it's bullshit, but I like Tom. I also think that he's really trying to play Trump up, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but I just sometimes I see some of the stuff he says. I'm like, I don't know if I'm biting on that, but he's been right about some stuff. So, yeah.
A lot of people have been right about some stuff. But I don't know. I think that's played up in the press, you know. And I think it's is it possible? Yeah, because Trump doesn't have seem to have an interest in the implications of what it might mean. Hey, you gonna hit him big or what? You know, without realizing the implications. If you send an American missile into Moscow, it's World War III. It's nuclear Armageddon. You know, he doesn't seem to. He seems to be almost sociopathic. He doesn't understand the consequences of actions, and so he does things without taking a second. And we both know people like this, I'm sure. I'm sure that I certainly that I do, who will do things and they have no idea the consequences of what they of their actions might be, and it's a dangerous thing to have, you know, to have inside. So I wouldn't put it past him doing it, but I think it's been overplayed in the press. But the other issue that's complicated, not even complicated, but it's absolutely makes no sense, is in his mind, he has a fixed idea that the United States is a mediator in the conflict, when in fact we are providing weapons, and he has now said, "I will provide weapons to Ukraine." He said that a few days ago, and today he said, "I'm not on either side." You can't do that. You can't do that. If you and someone down the street were about ready to have a knife fight, and I grabbed the big switchblade and handed it to you, said, "Here, Kyle, this is way bigger than the other guys. But hey, I'm not part of this fight." It's come on, it's absurd. You can't play mediator. You know, in a boxing match, the referee can't start hitting one of the other two boxers and say, "Hey, I'm just the ref, man." It doesn't work that way. So he doesn't understand that we are a co-belligerent. The United States is a co-belligerent. The only way for us to be an honest broker and to be a mediator in this is to stop being a co-belligerent. We're out of the game. We're done. It's up to you. Europeans want to do it? Mertz, you want to do it? Knock yourself out, bro. You know, Macron, you know, you can't even escape your wife from hitting you in the face. You're going to take on Russia? Knock yourself out. You guys go for it. Kaya Kallas, go for it. Go for it. All of these nobodies, von der Leyen, go for it. We're out of here. He could have said that, and it would have completely, and I'm being somewhat glib about it, to be honest, but it would be completely over by now. And what does that mean? That means there would be thousands less Ukrainian men, young men dead. You know, the demographics of Ukraine are absolutely horrific. The reason why Zelensky resisted drafting 18-year-olds is because if you look at the age, related demographics, the 18 to 25, it was a time where there were very, very few births. And so you have kind of a semi big gap of these sort of 40 somethings. And then you have this huge, tiny, tiny sliver. So what they've done is they have completely destroyed the ability to survive as a country demographically. And that on top of the fact that a new study came out showing that Ukrainian women are giving birth to 0.9 children in their life. So you're seeing
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
A civilization-ending crash in population that is complicated by the destruction of probably 1.5 million men. And that's an absolute tragedy that was completely unnecessary. And if it weren't for people like Boris Johnson back a couple of years ago, and everyone now in the administration like Lindsey Graham, who's egging it on, what does Lindsey care? He doesn't have any kids. He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care about the future. It's just him. You know, it's just his ego. And so not only would we not have to worry about it and pay the bill, by the way, but we would not have this on our collective consciences, the idea that thousands of young men are being destroyed with the money that's being stolen from us.
Yeah, it's amazing that when the war first broke out, Trump, you could find a news interview, and it was over the phone. Trump said it was a genocide. That's exactly what he said. He said that Russia is committing a genocide in Ukraine. Why would you continue to send weapons into Ukraine when even Trump has explicitly said that, like, he knows Russia's going to win? Everybody with a brain knows that Russia has more than enough people to just keep throwing at the problem until the problem goes away. That's a way that they can do it, because, you know, look at the size of the country. And then also think about, like, how Putin has led the country for his people over the last, you know, 20 years that he's been serving. People are willing to die for that because it's a great country. And once again, their standard of living is getting better and better and better. And it's the same way I kind of look at China. Like, they have great leaders. Xi and Putin are both great leaders for their country. We don't have that here anymore. People aren't going to go sign up to die for Joe Biden, Donald Trump, or Kamala Harris. Some people may die for Trump, but I mean, nowhere near the same amount of people that are going to want to die for Xi or die for Putin, because they realize that their country's something worth, you know, fighting for. Ukraine, I mean, there's some elements of that, but I mean, they just don't have the people to really, you know, put up against Russia. So it's exactly what you're seeing. People are just getting slaughtered needlessly. And people use the argument, oh, well, Joe Biden already sent these weapons in, and oh, we might lose trust. But like you said, why not just walk away from, hey, this is Joe Biden's war. This wouldn't happen under me. We can't help you anymore. You're on your own. I'm sorry, but we can't help anymore. We have to focus on us. Instead, like you said, tied in.
Well, as people are very enthusiastic about reminding me on X, I am not in the best shape that I've been in my life. I was a football player in high school, but but that's like me taking on an MMA fighter, right? You know, I'm Ukraine and I'm taking on some big MMA dude. Yeah. I'm not in the best shape. It's not a good risk. Kyle, you'd be in the bar saying, yo, take it easy, McAdams. This guy is a hell of a lot bigger than you. You know, maybe it's time to stop the beer. But, you know, in all seriousness, it's funny that Trump would say it's a genocide, because I wouldn't say it's a genocide. It's kind of a, I don't know the right word. I'm sure there is a word for it, but a destruction of the demographics of the country. But if you actually want to see a genocide, then you would only look over to Gaza, where you see the people that are getting killed, they are civilians.
Yes.
And the civilians are outnumber those of military in the military by a factor of enormous. Now, you can be sure that if Russia was targeting civilians in Ukraine, we would know it. It would be on our screens. And it's hilarious, because I look at reports all the time. I look at the technical reports of the strikes. And you'll see, like, even when Russia strikes in Kiev, you'll see Russia launched 50 drones into Kiev and blew up a ton of crap. One person was killed and 3 were injured. Mm-hmm. Like, that wouldn't even be before the coffee break in Gaza. It's 100 civilians a day on a slow day are killed in Gaza, and Trump can't bring himself to say a single word about it. So there is a genocide, but it's not happening, thankfully, in Ukraine. Does that mean that I think the Russians are the most moral people on earth? No, but it's irrelevant. They are not targeting civilians. It's just a fact.
Yeah, it's obviously tragic, but you know, to your point, and I also wanted to talk about this a little bit today, because this goes back to the whole optics point, is that we keep hearing, oh, Trump and Netanyahu are fuming at each other. They hate each other, but what happens at the end of the day? He ended up striking Iran, which, you know, we're all told, oh, this is fine, the 12-day war is over, but with the way Israel acts, how can you be sure? Like, I'm not sure at all that, you know, Israel's not going to go and start striking in Iran again or do something else to flame up tensions. They're such a rogue, just belligerent state. How can you believe that, like, this 12-day war was just Trump dropped some bombs on some nuclear facilities and then that's it? I have zero confidence that, you know, this is over.
Yeah, Bibi had Trump on speed dial like less than 24 hours into it. You got to save us, man. It's literally true. Yeah. He formally requested the U.S. assistance within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So again, back to that scenario that I launched earlier, slightly in jest. Here's me getting myself in trouble in a bar and Kyle comes along, you know, hey, I got Kyle behind me, man. I can be as much of a jerk as I want to, yeah. You know, and that's what it was. So if Israel wants to hit Iran again, that's their business. But I'd say not another American dollar, not another American bullet, not another American bomb. I mean, we use 20%, 20 to 25% of our entire inventory of THAAD missiles in the first week of this war. Ours, we paid for them. We paid for them. That's $1.5 billion on top of everything else we get them. And that doesn't even talk about the arrow missiles that they use that we gave them and all the other ones and just the cost of refueling their jets. All of these things, we're probably in for maybe $5 billion because they started a war, and they started a war where we were supposedly having consultations and discussions with Iran to solve it peacefully. They, at least if you believe the story, they went behind our back and did a sneak attack. So why the heck are we pulling their chestnuts out of the fire? If they want to go for it again, let them do it. But, you know, I certainly won't say it, but the FAFO is definitely in operation, because if you look at some of the damage, even though it is heavily, heavily censored in Tel Aviv and in Israel, Iran did some incredible damage. And here's a little bit, by the way, Kyle, a little bit of an indication as to what the capabilities of the Iranian missiles are. The Iranian strike at the U.S. base in Qatar, it was kind of a symbolic, okay, well, it's going to kind of hit you, don't worry about it, that kind of thing. It struck a extremely important, extremely sensitive radar facility at the base. That's the only thing that they struck, was that very specific thing. And if you look at the satellite photos, everything around it was completely normal. It was just that, it's like kind of like a bubble. It was just that bubble, and it wasn't a huge target. It was just that was struck. That's the accuracy of Iranian missiles. So, and the Israelis know this, and they know if they launch again, they're going to have to reach out to the U.S. again. But guess what? The cupboard's bare now, right? There's not much left to give them. So, you know, I just say, if you guys want to do it, go for it. Just leave us out of it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I don't know that it's going to be the case. I was a little hopeful initially because when Iran had initially started striking Israel, they didn't immediately strike. America didn't immediately jump in, which was kind of a surprise for me because, you know, I was a little bit of the mind about a year ago that, yeah, if something like this were to happen immediately, but eventually Trump did cave. So I don't know what to believe, and I'm curious your thoughts on it. Do you think Trump was negotiating in good faith, or do you think it was legitimately him trying to lull them so that way Israel could strike?
Well, if you look at some of the things, you could find them easily on X. Steve Witkoff said some strange things.
Sure.
Strange things that indicated that he was not a good faith negotiator. So I have some serious doubts about that. And hopefully the Iranians have learned their lessons. The United States, sadly enough, the U.S. government are a bunch of liars, and they have been for a long time. All we have to do is, I mean, just recent history, the Minsk I and Minsk II agreements that the U.S. was part of. And it wasn't us alone, of course. It was Angela Merkel in Germany. It was France as well. Was it Hollande in France? Who was it then? Sarkozy, whatever. They were all negotiating in bad faith, and they all knew it. They were just trying to buy time. So hopefully they've learned that lesson. that you can't negotiate with the U.S. It's not a reliable partner, and it's a shame to say that, because I'd like to think that that's not the case. But you know, time and time again, it's been proven that these guys who run D.C. are just bad guys. They're bad actors. They're not good people. They don't have good moral character.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be that way. And that seems to be a theme of the Trump administration's negotiation style, is just everything's limp-wristed, where they'll negotiate and they'll take all the good optics from it. But then as soon as anything becomes a bump in the road, they throw their hands up and say the other side's being unreasonable and then escalate. It seems to be a constant theme.
That's exactly right, Kyle, because you know, this is like the synopsis of U.S. negotiation with Russia on Ukraine. It's like, okay, the Kellogg plan is an absolute turd.
Yes.
And they keep serving it up. He keeps putting it on a nicer plate. Here, Putin, do you want this turd? You guys stop shooting, and then we'll give more weapons to Ukraine, and then it can start again. No thanks. And over and over. And so when Putin refuses to do something incredibly stupid, which never in the history of the world, when you're winning a war, do you stop and say, okay, we're done. We're okay, guys. Yeah. You know, we're okay. It never happens. When you have the momentum and you're winning a war, you don't stop. It's common sense. And so the fact that Putin kept saying, no, I don't want the Kellogg plan, that's what freaked Trump out and said, he's just not doing what I tell him. Well, guess what? Grow up. You know, this is the real world. And Putin, for all of his faults, the one thing you can say is he seems to be certainly looking out for his country's interests. They feel it's an existential crisis, which it is. Having an aggressive NATO on your doorstep is an existential crisis. And Trump himself admitted that. Remember, it was like a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, maybe, I guess, when he said, yeah, I get it. You know, NATO expanded up to his doorstep. I can see why he was ticked off about it. You know, so he has kind of these, like a little short, brief period of lucidity where he does understand the real world. And then he goes back on his phone and starts doing some crazy stuff.
Yeah. And it's, like you said, it's so childish, essentially. Because to believe that Russia is just going to come to the negotiating table by doing the same exact policy that's failed now for the last, geez, you know, 3.5 years, why would Putin think anything different? And, you know, at a certain point, he's just not going to listen to you anymore if all you do is just constantly say, hey, we're going to continue to arm Ukraine, who's right on your border, but we want you to stop winning the war. How do you take the U.S. seriously at this point?
Yeah, it's terrible, you know, and it's a shame to say it. It's a shame to say it. But, you know, things aren't going well. And now Trump is lashing out against the BRICS because he sees the economic writing on the wall, that because of U.S. foreign policy, because of U.S. using the dollar as a weapon, well, they use it as a weapon. It becomes kryptonite. People want to walk away from it. That's why BRICS was formed, in response to, you know, this obsession with sanctioning everything in sight. So, OK, you don't want us to use the dollar. That's fine. You don't want us to use SWIFT. You want to punish us? Okay, we'll find an alternative to SWIFT. And that's exactly what BRICS is doing. And it's not a currency, but mm-hmm. from what I've read and understand, it's sort of a use of a cryptocurrency sort of thing. You know, sort of the things that are beyond my comprehension. But the way to clear things in different currencies and what have you. So they're going to, you know, it's like water in a flood. It'll find its lowest level, and that's what's happened. So the U.S. has shot itself in the foot. And even with this ridiculous, absurd announcement by Trump a couple of days ago that, oh, we're going to put 100% secondary sanctions on anyone who buys Russian oil. Well, they'll just say, okay, well, that's fine. We won't trade with you. You know, if you keep doing this, I'm going to punch myself in the face again. You know, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned BRICS, but I think about like the Latin America countries, and obviously our stupendous leader, Marco Rubio, has a real hard on for the South American countries. It's like, well, why they wouldn't be trading with China if we would just leave them the F alone, quit trying to coup everybody down there, quit sanctioning them. Why don't we tell Venezuela, hey, we want your oil. We'll give you all the sanctions relief in the world if you give us preferential treatment in your oil markets, and life will be good. Everybody wins. But instead, we're like, no. We're gonna steal your planes. We're gonna sanction you into oblivion, and then we're gonna wonder why China has influence down in South America. To me, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, and here's a bonus: we won't screw up your economy, so your hardened gangbangers come up to the U.S. Right? You know, it's a bonus. It's talk about a win-win. It's a win-win-win. You know, we buy your stuff. You guys The ship's all raised through your, and you're not going to have these desperate people leaving your country coming over here doing weird stuff. It doesn't, I don't know. I guess, we're too smart to get it. I don't know.
Yeah, so I know we're a little over time for you. Let me read the super chat and I'll throw it over to you for closing thoughts. Conrail, thank you so much. Whether a country negotiates on the US terms or outright refuses to negotiate, geez, I couldn't get that word out. DC and the war machine wins. Yeah, unfortunately. So I guess one last thing I want to end on, because I want to end on a little bit of a high note. We were talking about how there's low inventory on some of the US weapons. A friend of mine, Buck Johnson, had quoted the great Dr. Paul and had said that one day the troops are coming home, whether it's by their own volition or not. Do you think that's in the cards with how we're low on weapons and I think probably low on morale?
Yeah, I mean, I think Buck is great. I have a huge admiration for him. He's a
Yeah,
cool
he's
guy.
awesome.
Yeah, he really is. And yeah, one way or the other. But I think the question Americans should ask themselves is, why are we forced to pay like $1.5 trillion at least for the military budget, and we don't have any weapons? Like, where does it go? I mean, we used, as I said, we used 20% of our inventory in that 1 week war that wasn't even our war, and there's
Right.
nothing left. So where the heck's all the weapons? We don't have the capacity to build these weapons. I think we build, don't quote me, how many, like 90 to 100 Thads a year. They cost $16 million each or whatever. We just we're not able to build these weapons. So where is the money going? Well, I spent 14 years living in the Beltway, and I know where the weapons are going. They're going to, or the money is going, not the weapons. That might be a different idea. But the money's going to McLean. It's going to Clifton. It's going to all these wonderful, fantastic mansions that you can't even drive by without people glaring at you. It's a scam. And the sooner that American working people realize that it's a scam, I think that's when we can finally see some things starting to turn around.
Yeah, well, let's definitely hope for that. I guess on that point as well, I know that you have a event coming up, which I wish I could attend, but my daughter's literally going to be born, I think, not even about a week before then. So why don't you tell everybody where they could support you and the event that I'm alluding to?
Yeah, we have our annual, I hesitate to say DC, it's actually in Dulles, Virginia. And we do it out there because you can easily fly into the Dulles Airport, take a quick shuttle for 5 minutes, and get over to the Hilton over there. And it's a great event. I'm a little bit biased, but we always have great speakers, and we've got people that, I mean, people that I really admire, and I'm humbled and thrilled that they will take their time and come from their own volition to speak with our people. And we have people like Colonel Doug McGregor, who's been there a few times before. We have my great friend Max Blumenthal is going to be there with his wonderful wife Anya Parampil, who I've known for a long
Great.
time. We've got Natalie Morris from the Redacted show. Natalie and Clayton Morris, if you're interested in people who are not from the left but who are critical of Trump and our foreign policy in an intelligent way, she's terrific. She's going to be there. Nassim Nicholas Taleb, one of the greatest thinkers of our time, the Black Swan, is going to be there. So it's going to be a real great event. And aside from listening to people that are really brilliant people who I admire, it's also just being in a group of maybe 200 or 300 or so people who are like-minded. And you make connections, you make friends, maybe you make business partners, but you can trust these people because they're decent people. So anyway, if your viewers or listeners go to ronpaulinstitute.org, we have a little blue banner on the top, and that'll take you to getting more info and getting more ticket and getting some tickets if you can. It's a heck of a bargain to spend a day listening to some great people, and we just love to see as many people as possible packed into the room.
Yeah, well, I went last year and I'm very, very sad I'm not going to be going this coming year because it was a blast. I hung out with Dave DeCamp, who I know was a speaker for one of the groups there, and Patrick McFarland and my friend Ben. We all had a good time together, and it was last year was Professor Mearsheimer. I'm trying to remember who else, but yeah, there were a bunch of great speakers, and I just had a really, really good time last year, so I can't recommend that enough. And also the Ron Paul barbecue, correct?
Yeah, that's not our project, but yeah, that's happening the week before down here in Texas. So if you want to burn your booties, come on down to, that's our friends at YAL putting that on for Dr. Paul's
Oh,
birthday.
okay, gotcha.
But it's gonna be a hot one.
For sure. All right, Dan, any final thoughts on where people could find you?
Well, we do the show Monday through Friday. I only do it Monday through Thursday with Dr. Paul, the Ron Paul Liberty Report. As of now, we're live on Rumble at noon Eastern time. So catch the show and give us some comments as we go.
Nice. Well, Dan, thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it. And everybody, thank you so much for the super chats. Conrail, thank you so much for donating. Real quick, one of the greatest things from Dr. Paul is the goal in politics, culture, and education is never seek power, rather to seek change of the minds through persuasion, one soul at a time. Yeah, I think that's awesome. Dan, one more time, thank you so much. I think we'll wrap there.
Thanks, Kyle. Take care. Great talking to you again.
Of course.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.